Hello and welcome to the first in-season episode of Year 3 of the Three Bid League podcast. College basketball is back. It is happening. It is no longer a question mark. And we just got done with seeing half of the league, seven teams exactly, play anywhere from 2 to 4 games here in these opening 5 days, plus Davidson and GW both playing one. We're still waiting for 5 other teams to start, 3 due to their own COVID outbreaks. Dayton and Duquesne still waiting for the schedule to come their way and get things started. Matt, we got a lot to talk about today. A few things I'm excited about. We got plenty of great mailbag questions.
Tyler, you're right about that. I think this might be the best crop of mailbag questions we've ever had in the Three Bid League podcast. So thanks to all of you guys. We're going to answer as many as possible. And it was just such a fun week. I'm glad basketball is back, even though our teams didn't get to play yet, but that'll happen soon, hopefully. And yeah, we had a lot of success too this week within the league, which is great to see at the beginning.
Yeah, it's certainly the largest number of mailbag questions we've ever gotten in one episode. So I think we might have to get rolling on that right from the top.
Yeah, that sounds good. And this is one from James of St. Joe's Twitter. And he asked us to talk about giving a surprise, an expectation met, and a disappointment from the first week of the season. And that's a great question because it's already something I think we wanted to spend some time on here in the first week because there were some surprises and disappointments, clearly. So, Tyler, I think we should start this podcast off with the good news from this week. What's your biggest surprise of the week?
So I'll go with really, I'm going to kind of split this question up into two parts. In terms of a surprise, I guess it would be St. Joe's. You know, certainly not surprised that they went 0-2. They played 2 perennial powerhouse programs. Not surprised that the defense struggled. And I'm not surprised that their offense was good. But what I am surprised about is how good it was. And even more so than that, just the level of confidence that these transfers had. Last year, we saw an offense that was basically Ryan Daly doing everything by himself. Occasionally, they would get some good things from Cameron Brown, but you really just didn't get a lot from anyone else after the Taylor Funk injury. Well, now Funk's back. They added a fantastic freshman in Jordan Hall, plus 3 transfers who played big minutes. And really the only guys that are still left playing are Daly and Brown. They've completely revamped their rotation. And these guys are already starting to click together, those 7 guys. And even more important than that, they're so confident. Those guys, I think they really thought that they could beat Auburn. And I think they might've thought that they could beat Kansas too. So I don't know if St. Joe's is going to avoid the basement. They'll avoid the basement this year. I don't know if they're going to avoid the pillow fight this year, but they're going to be so entertaining and they're going to be tough to keep away from the hoop.
They are going to be fun to watch. I was really impressed with that first Auburn game. Disappointing that they couldn't pull it out at the end. A couple missed free throws cost them, and then Auburn just made some tough shots down the stretch. I think the biggest surprise in terms of the Hawks, just because we didn't even expect him to play when we were doing our season previews, but Jack Forrest, the Columbia transfer, recently got his waiver approved. He hasn't been in the starting lineup, but he's shown a lot of promise both as a slasher and a 3-point shooter. And, you know, even if he was playing, which we didn't expect at first, I honestly didn't know how much they'd get out of an Ivy League transfer that only averaged around 8 or 9 points a game, but he's been one of their best players on the court so far, and I'm interested to see what he can do the rest of the season.
Him and Taylor Funk have just helped to provide the floor spacing that they pretended that they had last year. We talked about it in their preview. They were top 10 in the NCAA in 3-pointers taken last year, but were bottom 10 in 3-point percentage. That's just a recipe for disaster. Well, they're playing the same way, but now you have Taylor Funk and Jack Forrest and James Bishop, and you have guys who can actually knock down the 3 ball. And so Ryan Daly's not just crashing into a pile of bodies anymore. He can actually, like, try to go around guys on his way to the hoop.
Yeah, Funk coming back is quite a big deal. Even though he hasn't shot the ball quite as well the last couple seasons, he's off to a good start now. He's 5 for 13 after two games. And I agree, he is huge for their spacing. The Hawks are still going to take a lot of threes just like last year, but now they're actually getting a few more open threes. And so with that, I think it kind of leads us, since we're already talking about St. Joe's, we got another question from Adam Lindner, who helps run the Bluffcast, a Duquesne podcast. And he asked us, who was more impressive relative to expectations, St. Joe's or VCU, who took home third place in the Bad Boy Mowers crossover classic?
It's, wow, that's tough. You know, I'm going to say St. Joe's. I was just shocked by how good they looked offensively. I mean, there's really nothing deeper to go into than what I just said. VCU, I know that I picked them low and took a lot of crap from the VCU fans after three games for that, but I never felt like I had a full grasp on them. They were one of the bigger range teams in this league, and you know, their floor is a little higher than I thought. I'm not sure their ceiling's any higher than I expected. So, you know, they had an impressive weekend, but I can't say I was massively surprised.
I think for me, if St. Joe's won the Auburn game, I'd say they were more impressive. But the fact that VCU actually did win two games, I have to go with them. I'm really excited. You know, I made some preseason comments about how I thought they were going to be great on defense. I feel like Havoc's back. They're going to hopefully get better throughout the season because it is such a young team, but they're forcing turnovers. They were causing a lot of pressure on Memphis and Utah State in those ones. And overall, it's just clear. This is so much different than the VCU we saw at the end of last season, where that team just couldn't win any games. They weren't playing their up-tempo, energetic style, and it just wasn't getting them results. But this year, I think you'd probably agree with me that they're not quite one of the better teams in the half court yet on offense, but when they're playing with tempo, they're pretty tough to defend, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch them so far.
Yeah, you know what? I changed my answer. I kind of forgot about the Memphis game. I was thinking about the first 2 days because, you know, their defense played so well against Utah State, but Utah State kind of just played a garbage game. The Memphis win was super impressive.
Yeah,
Memphis they shut good. Them down. Memphis's offense played like crap because VCU forced them to play like crap.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take the Rams. That Hassan Ward. Can we talk about Hassan Ward for about 30 seconds here? He is dynamic at the rim on defense. He also kind of is pretty nice. Does a pretty nice job jumping passing lanes. Like he has an all over the court dynamism to him on defense that really only Michael Hughes possesses in this league right now. And I don't expect him to play more than 20, 25 minutes, even at his best this year. But when we start to glance ahead to next year and at the end of this season, when we really start to make our predictions as to what's going to happen in 2022, Hassan Ward might be a defensive player of the year at some point in his final 2 years in the conference.
Yeah, I'm already a huge Hassan Ward fan. I was pretty disappointed he didn't play very much the first two games, but he finally got 21 points against Memphis and had a good game on offense too with 9 points. But I agree with what you said on defense, both as a rim protector, he's great. And also with his crazy wingspan and quickness for a big man, I think he moves his feet quick enough to avoid those silly fouls you always see 30 feet away from the basket. I haven't seen that too much with him compared to what you might expect with how much he plays on the perimeter and how he tries to intercept those passing lanes. And yeah, overall, I'm hoping he starts playing more because I just feel like VCU's been a better team with him on the court. And then I think the other surprise we need to talk about with the Rams, all of a sudden Vince Williams is a really good 3-point shooter. He's 6 for 13 now through three games, which I believe the stat of the day was that he made 6 3-pointers each in his first two seasons.
So I'll carry this back to James's question then. The second half of my surprise, there were three guys this weekend where I really changed my opinion. And, you know, it's early in the year. We're starting to gather information on these transfers. And At this point, too, I think it's also unfair to lower your opinion of anyone. Anybody can play two crap games. But there were three guys in these first 5 days where I saw something that I just flat out did not expect. And I think it's sustainable. The first one is Vince Williams. I had him as one of my top three breakout guys last year. And, you know, plain and simple, he was bad. I kind of forgot he was on VCU's team at the end of the season. Then he ends up having double rotator cuff surgery. And, you know, I think he becomes this year's prime example of he was probably hurt and we didn't know it guy. He has, yes, he's never actually put together a big three-point shooting night on paper, but he was never a bad shooter in terms of his form. He's a great defender, and from every indication, he works his ass off. And I'm sure he spent all summer just putting up jumper after jumper. I don't think this is a fluke at all from Vince Williams. I think this is sustainable. And, you know, with him, between him and Ward, I think they might already be the second and third best players on VCU behind Bones Highland. I think those are guys that are going to have to be key starters by January or February if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, they've actually both been coming off the bench so far, and I think that's shown us that VCU might be one of the deepest teams in the conference. They haven't even had Jared McAllister the first three games, and they've still gone 12 deep. So there are a ton of options. I think for now, early in the season, it's great that Mike Rhodes is giving these guys a chance to see what they can do. And probably once we get farther on into the season, we'll find out who's going to step up and be the main starters. But right now, I mean, even these freshmen we haven't really talked specifically about, but those guys seem like they can play at an A-10 level.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of guys, whether it's Clark or Keyshawn Curry or Ace Baldwin, who had moments this week. And these are guys that are just going to have to put it together over the span of a whole game or a run of games to keep their minutes. So I think the pressure is going to start to mount on some of these VCU players, and maybe some guys who are playing minutes now or possibly even starting might be out of the rotation come January. This team's a big work in progress.
Yeah, I guess last thing I really want to say about VCU, if we do our all fun teams this year, I think Keyshawn Curry has a good chance to make my list. He's got to be one of the quickest players in the conference, and he's just flying all over the place. He's great at getting to the rim. I think he's one of the quickest guys off the dribble in the conference. And then defensively, too, I think he's been doing a great job. I'm just overall impressed by him. I think he brings so much energy to the court.
This team can be fun.
Oh, yeah. They weren't last year.
Bones was just, like, flat-out reckless in the second half of that Memphis game. And it actually worked. Because their offense got so slow, and I tweeted something out about it. Like, just somebody set a screen for this man, please. He's so quick with the ball. They have two big-bodied guys on the court at all times. Like, I just want to see Levi Stockard flatten an opposing point guard while he's out there. But I think Bones flat out just got sick of the swing around and just started going into double teams at the rim, and it basically kept them going at a point where their offense was starting to stagger out in that game. But between him, Curry, and Ward, they're going to be entertaining as hell. Because, by the way, this team also turns the ball over a ton. Them and GW, they're going to be the two outcomes teams this year, where sometimes it's going to be super fun from a getting the ball into the bucket standpoint. But it also might be really fun to see it just become a train wreck once every five games.
Yep, I agree with that. But good for VCU. Third place is definitely better than where I think a lot of people would have had them in this solid tournament. So that's a good start to their season. I guess, are you ready to talk about some of our big wins over power conference teams?
Absolutely. And that takes me to my second guy that I have raised my expectations of this season, and that's Javonte Perkins. And crazily enough, he's really the one guy over the off season that as we got closer and closer to the year, I studied him more and more and realized I actually was underrating him. As we talked about so many times, I thought that he was going to be closer to what he did last year, at the end of the season with that hot streak, but that he couldn't keep it up. And, you know, to me, I thought that that was maybe like fringe all conference. He's just a good, he's a good scorer for them on nights where things go bad. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that if he did that, he's one of the 10 best guys in this conference anyway. And that explains why I bumped SLU up to 2 in my final preseason rankings. Well, this weekend, what he showed is that the hot streak might just be who he is over 30 games. And if that happens, then all of a sudden we're talking about not just a player of the year contender, but quite possibly the player of the year favorite. It'll be a little bit more difficult when Hassan French comes back. The lane will get more clogged. And by the way, they need French for his defense and rebounding, so you take that sacrifice. But what Javonte Perkins did against LSU is that's first team all conference crap right there.
Oh yeah. I will shout out our friends West Pine Bills and agree that Javonte Perkins is elite. What a showing, especially he didn't even do that much in the first half against LSU when St. Louis was still playing well without him. But the second half, once LSU started making tough shots every single possession, Perkins was just answering the bell. And he's just so good at getting open on the court. Even when he's, you know, dealing with a contested shot, he's still able to get them off quickly. He's 8 for 13 on three-pointers, so I'm not too worried about his hot streak anymore from last year, whether or not that can carry over. He's been so impressive. And then I think with St. Louis, what, you know, people have been telling me all year, when you add a couple other talented offensive players around him, all of a sudden you get a team that was pretty average on offense last year. Now they're looking pretty darn good through two games. I wonder when the last time St. Louis scored 80 points back-to-back games. Probably hasn't happened in a long time.
It was incredibly impressive. Gibson Jimerson, it looks like what he did last year.
Don't you mean Giberson Jimerson? Didn't you see Rothstein's tweet?
Oh, I missed that. Gibson Jimerson picked up where he left off too. These two together are really going to give them a level of floor spacing that they haven't had in so long. And my question to you, for the rest of this season, would you rather have Javonte Perkins right now, where he's at right now, or senior year Javon Bess? I never thought that we would have this conversation, but it's getting really close now.
Yeah, that's a tough question. And I did, you know, the thing that you're not going to get with Javonte Perkins, Javon Bess was one of the best defensive players in the A-10 while he was at St. Louis. I don't really think Javonte Perkins is that guy. And the announcers during the LSU game even mentioned that LSU started going after him a couple times just because, let's face it, St. Louis is a team of very good defenders. And Javonte Perkins is he's fine. He holds his own, but he's not really one of those guys. I think, though, in this case where St. Louis is good enough already defensively, they don't really need him to be that elite defensive stopper, too. So I would say right now Perkins is just a better fit for their team.
You're playing against a team that also has Jordan Goodwin and Yuri Collins. Wouldn't you go at Javonte Perkins if you were the opposing coach?
Right, yeah.
Javon Bess was a conference player of the year. Now, granted, I just think the talent this year is way better at the top end than the year Bess won player of the year. And
Axel won it that year, didn't he? Did Javon Bess won? He was first team for sure.
Yeah, you're right. Javon Bess was first team. He was the player of the year. He was the player of the tournament that year.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's close. And if I'm down by one on the final play of the game, I think I'd rather have Perkins at this point. I'd rather have Bess for the full game for defense, and because Bess was a quietly great rebounder. But one possession, I think I'd rather have Javonte Perkins. And, you know, the SLU fan base, I don't remember if it was John at West Pine Bills or Colin over at House That Rick Built. One of them told us back in April that they thought he was going to be an All-American.
Yeah. And
it's still a long shot, but God, it's not crazy anymore.
No, and I think we're finally starting to see Perkins get that national attention, because on Saturday with football going on, somehow this LSU St. Louis game ended up on ESPN Plus, but it was probably the biggest college basketball game of the day. And you could see national writers and personalities were really giving him a lot of respect toward the end of that game. And I think anyone who didn't know that name knows who Javonte Perkins is now. And I can't wait to see what he keeps doing the rest of the season. So far, it's just been crazy to watch. And, you know, overall, I have to give a lot of credit to St. Louis offensively. I thought they'd be better than last year. I didn't think they'd be this much better. And it's just been really impressive. I have to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, and, you know, like I mentioned earlier, not having French spaces the floor a little bit more. So I'm not sure the offense is quite as good as we saw this weekend. But, of course, the other piece of that is the defense is far better than what we saw. Giving up, they wouldn't have given up 81 points to LSU if Hassan French had played.
Yeah.
And basically to just survive this game without him is impressive in and of itself.
Right. And I'd also say, too, though, even though they haven't had French the first couple games, I think Martin Linson, the UNC Wilmington transfer, he's a solid pickup for them. And I really wasn't sure what to expect, just him coming from a low major program. But he stepped in. He plays really hard. He's a good rebounder. And I think the Billikens are going to get a lot out of him this year. He's not quite Hassan French on the defensive end, but he's a solid player and definitely, you know, good enough to be one of the better big men in the A-10, I think.
Yeah, and I want to end the St. Louis discussion on this because it happened at the end of the LSU game, and I think I've said it before, and I know I will certainly say it again. If you're down two on defense against St. Louis, how do you possibly let Javonte Perkins catch the inbound?
Mm-hmm.
I would put two guys on him. I would put three if I have to. He's an elite foul shooter who shoots, who's even better at the line when the game gets close. The rest of this team is still a disgrace from the line. Like, just let Yuri Collins be wide open. Who cares? You can sprint over there quick enough to foul him. You're a D1 athlete. Like, I don't understand how these coaches continue to let him beat them at the end of games. And at some point, a very, very smart coach is going to figure that out.
Yeah, one thing I don't think is going to keep up. Right now, St. Louis is shooting 82% from the free throw line, which is 20th in the country. And a lot of that is Perkins being 10 for 10. But got to give him credit. It looks like they might just hit the over on our last podcast where I think you said it around 60%. But anyway, we did get a listener question for St. Louis. It came from Joel, who said, will you be making a retraction and an apology for your erroneous preseason ranking of SLU? And this is directed at me. I picked them fifth. And I've talked about this a lot, I think, on the podcast. St. Louis's last five games of last season were, to me, they seemed a lot better than the rest of their season. And I didn't know if that was something they could keep up. Now, through two games, they're looking really good. And I'm going to go ahead and say, me putting them in fifth place, probably not going to happen anymore. They're looking very solid. Now, someone else chirped at me and said, are you going to move St. Louis up to number one where they belong? And my answer to that, absolutely not, because of what we saw happen here on Sunday afternoon. So, Tyler, are you ready to get into that game?
Hey, you know what? I want to finish this out, finish out SLU on this. This just, how well Perkins played just reaffirmed what I had been saying. They are by far the most likely to get a double bye. Their floor is just higher than anyone else's in this league, and especially if Perkins continues to play well. They're going to be in the bubble discussion no matter what, if not just simply above it. So
yeah, definitely looking good. I mean, I'll give them credit. It looks like what I've said about them this off season isn't quite holding up, but that's okay. I mean, hopefully no one took it too personally.
So you mentioned the game this afternoon, and you know, if I did shift my preseason rankings, I think I'd probably bump Richmond back up from 4 to 3. You know, I went back and forth between them and Duquesne. We haven't seen the Dukes yet, but I was worried. I was worried that Richmond would just not adapt to losing Nick Sherrod. And today they manhandled Kentucky. you wouldn't have even known that Sherrod was gone. There's so many guys to give props to in this game, but I'm just going to flat out start with Chris Mooney, who weathered a 3-for-13 shooting game from Jacob Gilliard and a 6-for-19 shooting game from Blake Francis to beat a top 10 team on the road. The game plan was flawless. He let those two just attack like Wolverines on defense against the young guards of Kentucky. And he slow played their offense and basically waited for these young Wildcats to have lapses. He was ready with a perfect game plan today. Richmond obviously doesn't have as much talent as Kentucky, but what they do have is way more experience and just way less sloppiness. And Mooney just played those two perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much else to say. What an impressive win for Richmond. And I will give you credit. You did call this earlier in the offseason that Richmond was going to win this game. And I think it is, you know, an early time of the year where it's favorable playing against Kentucky when a lot of their freshmen haven't gotten that college experience yet. But overall, just an outstanding performance. We don't see A-10 teams beat someone out of the top 10 very often. I think for me, the biggest surprise for Richmond through two games, when we were doing our preseason previews, I didn't account for the possibility that Nathan Kao was going to be one of their best players. And I don't know if he's going to keep it going, but what he's done on offense the last two games has been nothing short of incredible.
And that's the third guy that I mentioned that I've raised my expectations for now. He's always been this great little Swiss Army knife for them. He was a decent, like, 15 to 20 minute a game guy as a sophomore. And then last year, he was really able to pick up his minutes because of how important he became to their low post defense. Now he's taken a step up offensively, and I think that this is real. He played with such a confidence today, and to anyone who watched that game all the way through to the end, you definitely remember his dunk through two guys. He flat out would not have attempted that shot in March. He would not have had the stones to go for it, and that happened 4 or 5 times in that game, where he's just so much more confident with the ball. He is going at guys, going at future NBA players in the post, and scoring through them or drawing fouls. I don't know if he spent his off season just getting punched in the gut repeatedly to bring up his toughness or something. I don't know if he spent months on end just doing finishing drills at the rim, but he's playing with a different tenacity, a different ferocity, and it's working because he's actually finishing with a little bit of style.
Yeah, KO has just been fantastic. 18 points in this one against Kentucky. And I think that kind of shows, you know, this game in general, something that I love about Richmond is they're not ever going to be overly dependent on any one player. This game, it was Nathan KO and Blake Francis each stepping up with 18 points. But I'm confident that on another night, it could be Jacob Gilliard or Grant Golden or anyone else like that. And I think the fact that Richmond didn't even shoot the ball very well, they went 7-for-25 from three, with Gilliard going 0-for-8, which you'd never expect to see out of him. The fact that they were able to survive that poor shooting, that's something they couldn't really get away with last year. To me, it seemed like whenever Richmond couldn't shoot, they just lost, and that was that. This year, it seems like maybe with KO being a stronger inside force, they can find other ways to win.
And that's why I was concerned with Richmond. Is they allowed the guards to just dictate so much last year. And you're completely right. If you put Gilliard and Francis's shooting numbers this year in this game into like a February game, they lose. They lose, God, maybe to everybody except for like Fordham or St. Joe's. They would have lost to any decent team in that scenario. But they rode Golden and KO in this game. And Grant Golden only ended up playing 20 minutes, but God, they were an impressive 20.
Yeah.
Mooney has realized that he has to go through the big men. They have to be the key to this team. And, you know, the last thing I want to put in for KO, I think he understands that at no point will he be one of the three best players on this team this year. He's not as good as Gilliard or Francis or Golden, and there's really nothing that he can do that will make him better. But he gets that. He took 13 shots today. All 13 of them were good shots. He was incredibly efficient. He had three or four different plays where you're just watching the ball dribble around, and then, whoop, Nathan Kao's just wide open for a layup. Like, how the hell did that happen? He kind of reminds me of basically just a kind of a stronger Ryan Mixel, where he's really giving Richmond everything so far this year that Ryan Mixel gave Dayton. The beautiful cuts, the tough plays at the rim, the great defense. And, you know, Mixel was the reason that Dayton went from great to special last year. And if the big three can perform up to par for them, Nathan Kao is going to be a guy who can lift them from, say, like a 7 seed to maybe a 4 seed. Those kind of guys are the guys that you have to have if you're trying to make a run into the second weekend of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. So I see Jacob Gilliard with 5 steals in this game, including the behind-the-back, just about full-court pass leading to the transition layup. I think I'm ready to just give him Defensive Player of the Year after seeing this one. I don't know. Can anyone catch him? Because what a great defensive game he had, coming up with some timely steals late in the game, too.
2 of his last 3 games have been astounding. As I've mentioned before, I was not going to vote for him for Defensive Player of the Year going into the last game of the season last year. He manhandled Duquesne's guards so badly that it swung it on just one game. And then he basically did it again today.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bones about it. He was terrible on offense today. And yet I still think he might have been their second best player.
So what happens when Jacob Gilliard has a decent game on offense? Because all of a sudden, I mean, Richmond just, I don't want to say they blew out Kentucky, but they were pretty comfortably ahead for a good part of the second half, and they ended up winning by 12. Is there an even higher ceiling that hasn't been unlocked yet with this team? Because I would never expect him to go 0 for 8 from 3 again.
I'm not sure that there's a higher ceiling. I think we just saw their ceiling. Because, yeah, they only won by 12, but it didn't feel that way. Like, this was not a win. This was just a straight-up punch in the mouth. If Gilliard or Francis was just simply decent from deep, because they were missing wide open threes, if they were simply decent, they would have just completely blown them out of the water. And that's the kind of stuff that's just fluky. What they did today would win them a game in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Overall, it's just encouraging. And I know before we got into this segment, I joked, absolutely not. I won't take St. Louis number one. And really, you know, it's too early to say, I think, through the first week of the season. But the fact that Richmond and St. Louis, the two teams that pretty much everyone agreed they would be solid this year at least, they're both playing great. And we haven't even seen 3 or 4 other potentially decent A-10 teams play yet. So I think with these two schools that were picked 1 and 2, so far they've set a great example for the conference. They're getting it done against major opponents. And I think that leaves a lot of room for optimism. I wouldn't, you know, lock either one of them into the tournament at this point, but these are some big wins. And I think we just need to, I hate rooting for LSU because of Will Wade, but I guess we have to root for LSU and UK now, because these wins are both going to look really good come March, I would expect.
I think the expectations would have said that St. Louis should have won on Saturday. The expectations said that Richmond should have at least been competitive today. They both outperformed. They both just flat out looked like tournament teams in these last 2 days. And the fact that I'm not ready to roll over and just say that these are going to be 1-2 in the conference just shows you that the top is going to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still, you know, I stick by what I said, and it's hard because we haven't seen Dayton or St. Bonaventure, Duquesne, or Shoot, UMass. Even UMass. Yeah, we haven't seen any of them or Fordham. I haven't played either. But, I mean, yeah, I think any one of those first four teams I mentioned, they could all be good too. So, I think if you want to say Richmond and St. Louis look like the favorites as they were predicted, if that's how it looks right now, I think that's fine. But there's a lot of teams too that can compete with them. And it's going to be a fun conference race. I'm feeling good about what we said about that last week. But so I guess we're still on James' question about surprises and disappointments in the A-10. What's your biggest disappointment? There are a couple, but you can start us off.
So first of all, big shout out to James, because we're basically just using his question as the guide to take us to our other questions in this show. But
yep.
Disappointments, I'll go with one big and one small. Small, I don't think Rhode Island has a point guard on this team. And we weren't certain that they did going into the year, but I think all of their key guys are just so much more content to just take the shot themselves. We saw like a 10-minute stretch in the second half of opening night where Fats really was just taking the distribution into his own hands. And it was the one time in that game that they looked great against Arizona State. I just don't know if there's a willingness to move the ball on that Rhode Island team. And it bumps me out because they got a lot of talent there, but I'm not sure those pieces are going to fit together at all. My big disappointment, LaSalle was just terrible. And I only saw the St. John's game because I, for the first time in years, I just couldn't even find the St. Peter's game.
I don't think it was on.
I think the only way to watch it was on the LaSalle Zoom watch party. They just don't have an offense. I don't know who they can trust to get them 10 points on a given night.
Yeah. I guess that can take us to, well, yeah, we'll start with LaSalle since we're already talking about them. We got a question from Rich over at the Golda Standard podcast. Great LaSalle podcast, by the way. Anyone interested in Philby basketball should check it out for sure. He asked us, what will happen first, a LaSalle victory or a victory from the A-10 teams who haven't played yet and won't play till the middle of December? Which I'm disappointed to hear that because those guys seemed really optimistic on their podcast.
First of all, just God bless those two that for starting the pod this year, because it's going to be a rough year for the Explorers. I basically took that question as a roundabout way to just say who's going to be the last team in the A-10 to get a win. We have seven teams in the A-10 that haven't won yet. Duquesne should be pretty quick. They got three games against decent mid-majors this week. At worst, they'll go 1-2. We're hearing rumors from Sully at Sully My Good Name, if you're looking for any good insider Dayton info, that they're about to add a bye game at some point this week. So that should come fairly quickly. We just got a time for GW Hampton on Tuesday. I thought that game might have been canceled. GW should be able to get a win on Tuesday. I'm just kind of flicking through this real quick. UMass and Bonaventure, I'm assuming, should be able to win one of their first two games each. So basically it comes down to, can LaSalle win a game before Fordham does? Fordham doesn't even have anything in the schedule for the next week. So I'm going to say LaSalle beats them to it. They got some not too difficult games coming up here.
Well, so this leads me into my disappointment, I think. LaSalle plays Howard next, and George Mason kind of just destroyed Howard. So I'm pretty sure LaSalle can win that game.
Oh, and McCurr's out. So
yeah. And George Mason, gosh, they're not very good. I'm not feeling it. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch a ton of their games just because there were usually some better games on. So sorry to say that, Patriot fans. But I don't know. I saw too many people, and I'm sorry, maybe this is a Power 8 hot take. I saw too many people defending the D2 school they played, Queens, North Carolina. Look, I get it. They're one of the best D2 schools out there. That's awesome. It shouldn't be close, though. Like, what are we saying? They, at best, they'd be the number 200 KenPom team. that should still be an easy win for George Mason. I'm not buying that as an excuse. They were beating Belmont for a little while, which was solid, but I don't know. I stand by what I said about George Mason in the preseason. They're not going to be in the basement, but I don't see a ton of upside with them.
I can forgive just kind of getting slapped by Belmont. That's a great program, and AJ Wilson didn't play.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's not a bad loss.
You can't be losing to Queens with 20 seconds to go.
No.
Like, you got to take care of business against the D2 schools. This is the kind of team that you would be playing an exhibition against if COVID wasn't going on. And I want to note something. I actually just pulled up the schedules real quick. So at the moment, it looks like UMass is going to open the year at LaSalle. You know, you just never like the idea of a team opening with a conference game, especially with UMass having not practiced for two straight weeks. They'll only have a few days under their belt. That's a stealable game for LaSalle to kick off A-10 season.
That's the kind of thing Jim Boeheim complains about, opening with a conference game. Did you see him? Syracuse just about lost to, like, Bryant or some Northeast school, and he was complaining that they didn't get to practice the last 2 weeks and they weren't ready. Are we going to see Matt McCall make excuses when the Minutemen drop that game? Because they haven't been able to practice either, to the best of my knowledge. And I'm not saying UMass is going to lose. They should be fine, but if it happens.
I mean, if they get back on time, they should have at least 4 or 5 days to get ready. So, yeah, I mean, you got to – there's no excuses if you can't take care of business this year against the Explorers. If you got a full squad at your disposal.
All right. I guess let's just wrap this up real quick and then get to our final questions. You talked about Rhode Island not really having a point guard, it looks like. And that might be true. I wouldn't call them a disappointment. They're 2-2 with some decent wins over South Florida and San Francisco. So I think they're at least going to...
I'm not calling Rhodey a disappointment. Yeah. I'm calling that a disappointment.
Right. And I think that's fair. It will be interesting to see how those pieces all fit. I do like Jeremy Shepard and Jalen Carey, though. They're both pretty solid players. I think you're right. Like, all of those guys can score. It's just going to be a matter of finding out who can be the main distributor, maybe, if that's where you were going. But I don't know. I'd say Rhodey met my expectations. I wish they could have held on to the Arizona State game, but not a bad week for the Rams.
I really wish Jeremy Shepard had been able to play last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is the sniper that they desperately needed. And if they had doubt, if you even just put Doughton on this team, just basically swapping out any of the guards besides Fats or Shepard, you got to have those three together for the season, I'd feel great about them.
Yeah. Well, I guess one more team I want to talk about, and then let's move on to the questions. I'm not disappointed. I was sweating bullets when Davidson almost got brutality by High Point. That was a close call, but I'm still not feeling that bad about Davidson. I was probably the most optimistic person outside of their fan base on A-10 Twitter. One thing I am super optimistic about, Hyungjoon Lee, as I predicted, what a game from him, 23 points and 9 assists. I'm encouraged that he can become the solid second-best player on this team. Or shoot, he was the best player that night. I don't know if that'll keep up. But I think one of the big questions with Davidson that we knew about going into the season, they just don't have that much depth. They didn't get much of anything from the bench. That's probably the biggest thing that's got to change. But Lee was really good. Their freshman Sam Meninga had a solid game. I think he had 12 points. So I don't know. We'll see how they do in the Maui Asheville Invitational this week.
I have no opinion. That game ended up being number 4 out of 4 on my watch list that night. So
that's fair enough.
I was locked in on both Rhodey and VCU that night, and in the gaps of time, I slipped over to St. Louis. So
yeah, I was just watching it because I was so nervous that they were going to lose after all the positive things I said about them, but I don't know. High Point did have a guy go off for 29 points. The rest of their team didn't do a ton. So I think Davidson's going to be okay. And I don't know. I love what Meninga did on the boards too, because you never think of Davidson as a great, like, offensive rebounding team, but he had 3 of them. I'm interested to see what he does against bigger and stronger opponents, but for a freshman, I thought he had a good first game. But yeah, we don't need to spend too much more time. We'll hopefully be talking about Davidson next week or whenever we do another podcast if they have a good showing in the Maui Invitational. But with that, are you ready to get on to our last couple questions here?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so this one comes from our previous guest, Stu Ledecky, who wanted us to go through what would our all-conference first team be with only people that have played in the first week of the season. And he was very specific, only five players on this team. I think, can we agree Javonte Perkins is player of the year so far?
Yeah, 100%. I started with the three guys that I already praised for kind of defying expectations this week. Perkins, Nathan Kao, who was not only great in the Kentucky game, but led them in scoring against Morehead State. And I ended up putting Vince Williams on there too. He was fantastic on both ends of the court. There was a big debate among the announcers who should have made the all-tournament team. I would have taken Vince Williams over Bones Highland.
Yeah, I can agree with those first three picks. He's only played one game and we just talked about him, but Hyungjin Lee's 23-5-9 run was really impressive. And I think that's been one of the best individual games so far. I know I'm already hyping him up as a potential all-conference player, but I don't know. What do you think about him?
I buy him as a sleeper. I mentioned him as one of my guys who's just kind of on the outside looking into all-conference right now. I'm certainly not as high as on him as you are, but, you know, he's one of the 30 best guys in this conference, so.
Yeah.
I'm also now realizing that's, I don't think that's what you're asking me.
More just for right now.
For this week. I can't argue with that. My fourth pick, I felt like we needed a second Richmond guy. I ended up, even though Gilliard was probably better today, I ended up going with Grant Golden. He was the fulcrum in his purest form. I will make that nickname catch on this season. He was only out on the court for 20 minutes against Kentucky because he just kept committing bad fouls. But those 20 minutes were basically Richmond's best of the game on offense. He was setting guys up with beautiful dribble handoffs. He was completely unafraid to go into the mangling of arms that Kentucky left in the paint. And he threw in a nice 16-point outing on 8 of 10 shooting against Morehead State earlier in the week.
Yeah, I think Golden's a fine pick, and there's a good chance he's going to end up making the real team. I was thinking for my fifth guy, I feel weird about picking a St. Joe's player when they're 0-2, but I think Taylor Funk or Jack Forrest, both those guys are playing well. So I don't know. I'll give Jack Forrest the nod. Why not?
So my fifth one, I went with Taylor Funk, and it was purely for the reason that He really put a spark into the post meal time of Thanksgiving. You know, the NFL sucked that day, and it was kind of a dead spot of college basketball around like post dinner time in the East Coast. And around that time, Taylor Funk, he was eating on the court, just raining down fire on Auburn, and really just reminding us the type of heat check wizard that he is. He will not keep this up. He is one of the most inconsistent guys I have ever seen. But when he is at his best, you watch out. And that Auburn game might have been even more impressive than – I still remember what he did against Wake Forest 2 years ago when he absolutely set them ablaze in the first round of whatever tournament they were in that year. Taylor Funk, man, it's – when it's going, it's wonderful. And I'll get – And when it's going, he deserves recognition. I'm putting him as my fifth. Golden, Funk, Williams, Perkins, and KO.
That's a good pick. I guess one more guy I want to shout out. It feels like Rhode Island, since they have played four games, seems like they should get a little recognition. He hasn't quite been as consistent throughout those four games, but Antoine Walker has had some moments where it seemed like in the second half against Arizona State, he had like four dunks in a row at one point. He's such an exciting player to watch, and I don't know. His overall numbers probably don't stack up, but he could potentially be really important for Rhodey this year. because I think the Twins were getting most of the attention out of their post players, but so far Walker's probably been their best big man.
He has been, and I overrated Rhody in conference play last year solely off of what Walker did in his debut against Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
And he never went back to that point again until the Arizona State game, where he really just showed those flashes again of a guy who can fit with this team no matter what's going on. And he was the guy that made Fats look so good when Fats was trying to distribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. All right, that was a great question. Thank you, Stu. Here's another good one from Noah Goldberg from the Spider Scoop. And he asked us, was the Richmond video feed from Rupp's Jumbotron more painful than watching Flow Sports? Now, I'm just going to say I have too many subscriptions already with ESPN Plus, Netflix, whatever. I'm never going to buy Flow Sports unless it's absolutely necessary. But that being said, it did seem like I only watched a couple minutes of Richmond's first game, but that was pretty tough. I commend anyone who made it through that entire game, but I don't think anything's worse than Flow Sports.
Flow Sports costs more than the Disney ESPN Plus Hulu bundle. Yeah. It's the answer is easy. It's absolutely the Richmond game. Like,
it was free.
It was free, and it was not hard to find. So if you're going to show me the game for free and I can figure out how to get there, I'll always take that. I don't care if it's like shot on somebody's phone from halfway up in the stadium. I'd rather have that than Flow Sports, which, by the way, that's what the broadcast quality of Flow Sports looks like anyway. You're paying money for basically just a crap broadcast regardless. So,
yeah. Going with another Richmond question, we got the Richmond athletic director and president of the Matt Grace fan club, Drunk John Hart, asked us, who is the sexiest player in the A-10 and why is it Matt Grace? Also, I mean, I will say I dig the new long hair look with the headband. He played pretty well too. I mean, I have nothing to add. That's a good answer. I won't argue with him.
He looks so much like Golden right now with them both rocking the same ponytail. So I guess if you're going to fall for Matt Grace, you got to fall for Grant Golden too.
Didn't the ESPN announcer today in the Kentucky game, didn't he call Golden the yoga instructor or something like that?
I think
he was talking about Golden.
By the way, I think Drunk John Hart, I think his brain broke today. Because when Matt Grace hit that three off of the Gilliard kickout pass to go up 13 and force the Kentucky momentum timeout, literally the next thing I did was pick up my phone and go look up his Twitter just to see what he was going to send out. There was nothing. I think that play broke his brain. So hope you're okay, guy who may or may not be Richmond's actual athletic director on Jack Daniels.
Yeah, very true. I'm happy for Drunk John Hart, though. I mean, Matt Grace is playing well. Big win for the Spiders. Just a great day for him. All right, let's see. We have a couple more good questions on here. We got one from David who asked us, who's going to end up with the most triple nickels this year? And I looked it up. Out of returning guys, Grant Golden had 7. Sincere Carey had 6. And then we had Lofton, Goodwin, and Daly and AJ Wilson all with 4, and that's all conference play only, by the way. I didn't track the non-conference.
If they're going to keep lobbing the ball to Jordan Goodwin originally. If they're going to keep lobbing the ball to Grant Golden right outside the block, it's going to be him, because I've said this so many times before. I think I'm probably a broken record now. I see so many 5-plus assist games from him this year, and I love the way that Mooney used him today. If they keep doing that, they're going to be so good, and he is going to rampage through that triple nickel category.
Yeah, I think Golden's the safest pick. Sincere Harry's going to get a lot too. I don't think Goodwin and Daly aren't going to get the assists very often.
Daly might. Daly's a dark horse because now he actually has like good scores around him.
Yeah, it's possible. I think I'd have to say Golden, though. I'll go with the guy that won it last year. Let's see. I think the last one we can do. Oh, actually, no. We have 2 more questions. Well, 3. So Kyle asked us to go through our all conference teams. We already tweeted those out, and I don't even have them in front of me, so I don't want to go through them all. Do you have anyone you want to plug, though? I mean, I just want to say Hyungjoon Lee is going to make the second team, and so will maybe Watson, but I don't know if you have anyone else to plug right now.
We cover, so a lot of what I ended up doing actually kind of went back to our April pod with Stu when we ranked the top 20 players. A lot of my takes remained the same. We already talked about my one big change earlier in the pod, which was bumping up Javonte Perkins. Mm-hmm. And God, I might still be too low on that, but you know, my third team's filled with some sleepers that I really love this year. Jameer Nelson Jr., TJ Weeks. I've gone on and on about both of them. Michael Hughes ended up getting my last spot. He might not even score 10 points a game this year, but I do think he's going to be the defensive player of the year in the conference. Although Gilliard might take that away now. Yeah, I mean, I put him out on Twitter. It's really indicative of what I think is going to happen with the conference. And with me expecting five teams to be jammed up at the top, I don't really, if that plays out, I don't see any team getting two guys on the first team. Especially if Trey Mitchell puts up great numbers too, then you're going to have to put them on even if UMass isn't a title contender.
Yeah, that is going to be a tough call. And we'll definitely be doing a lot more all-conference discussion as the season goes on, but kind of early to get too far into it, I guess. We got this question from Jack, which I think we've covered this a little bit in our preseason ones, but I think it's a good question. He talked about how last year VCU was the consensus pick to win the league and they ended up finishing ninth. Do you think there's any other consensus picks right now that are going to end up totally off the mark? I thought it might be St. Louis. It looks like I'm wrong on that one. I don't know. I don't have too many others. I'm still kind of optimistic for Davidson being better than seventh, but I don't know. It's too early for me to say there's anything that's way off right now.
A lot of the teams that I'm kind of low on, I'm only low on by a few. They're lower down anyway. Like Dave, I don't love Davidson. I don't love VCU. I still have no grasp on Rhode Island, but I feel like that the wheels could definitely come off there. There's a universe where Rhode Island actually ends up in the pillow fight, but I'm not going to say that that's likely right now.
I don't think so, but maybe.
I had Richmond a few spots lower than the picks, but once again, like Richmond could easily win this conference. I'm not going to – if they end up winning the conference, I'll just say that I was wrong and just take my lumps from their fans. It's not that far-fetched at all. I guess the only team that I'm afraid could take a huge drop-off, and I'm not going to predict it, but I'm on guard for it, is Dayton. I think I've said it before. I think three is just too high, and I love the guards. There's enough interesting guys in the front court to make me believe, but you lose the best player in the country in Obi, and you lose Trey Landers and Ryan Mixel, who, by the way, were two of the three best guys on a team that made a huge run in the TBT, playing against a bunch of guys who've been playing in good European leagues for years now. Those two guys were special, and they meant so much more to that team than I would say probably 95% of people who watched them realize. And they're going to hurt on defense and rebounding without them. So I'm on guard. I hate to say it, but if there's anyone who's likely to underperform their rating, I think that's it. I just think three is too high.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd really say it. Like, I agree that could happen. Or I don't agree because I've taken number one, or I had them number one. But I don't know if I'd say that's a consensus pick, just because you have Dayton fans and some other people, like Stu, who came on. He had Dayton number one. Other people are convinced they're going to suck without Obi, Mike, Selvin, Trey. And we don't know yet since they haven't played a game, but it could go either way. I think it's a hard team to predict, even as a big fan of the program. I still don't really know what to expect, but hopefully you're wrong. I hope we don't have to talk about a sixth place Dayton this year. That would kind of suck after last season, but who knows? And I guess with Dayton in mind, we'll go to our final question of the night from Ghost McHistory, who wanted us to talk about the best tweeterer per A10 fan base. And I don't even know how to answer this because there's so many. I guess I just wanted to shout out some of the new podcasts out there. We already brought up the Goalless Standard for LaSalle. West Pine Bills is a St. Louis podcast now. There are new Duquesne and Rhode Island podcasts out there. That's just awesome. There are so many in the A-10 right now for a mid-major conference or a Power 8. I don't think other conferences have this depth of podcasting. So pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, I don't think there's a reason to go team by team necessarily. And I actually think that this question is best answered by us maybe just firing off a tweet so that people can go find these guys, because I don't remember any of their handles off the top of my head. So
yeah,
I think we should answer this on Twitter. You know, just a few guys to shout out off the top of my head. Noah Goldberg over at Richmond. He's doing great work. We were just on his pod. Him and Austin Daisy are doing great things down on ESPN Richmond. I already mentioned Sully. He has gone from a Dayton podcast host to a Dayton radio host to now apparently he's like getting scoops on when they're going to play games. So if you're going to get, so he's got all the inside info. Yeah, you mentioned West Pine Bills, house that Rick built for St. Louis. The Bonna guys are pretty great for entertainment purposes. Stu Ledecky, we've had him on a zillion times. We're missing a lot of people. We'll fire this out in a tweet, though.
Yeah, good call. And speaking of that also, he did a fantasy league last year, but this year, SB Unfurled, who runs the St. Bonaventure podcast, he's doing a survivor pool with the A-10. Seems like a lot of fun. Definitely send him a message if you're interested. He's also been tweeting about it the last couple of days. If you want to get in on some fantasy A-10 action this conference season, that's something that could be a lot of fun. And he just does great work organizing graphics for the A-10, just sharing different stats. It's really cool work. So definitely make sure you're following him if you're a fan of any A-10 team.
Yeah, I'll throw this out. Actually, probably the two most unique accounts are SBU Unfurled, who puts together just incredible graphics. Some about the games. Sometimes he just plays around with court design. And then Matt Rhein, R-H-E-I-N. God, we had him on the pod and I still don't know how to pronounce his last name, but
I think you got it.
He's like the analytics nerd of A-10 Twitter. Fantastic graphs, does a lot of research into like player efficiency ratings. So we'll give him a shout out. And you know, we kept going on and on. I still want to close out the last question and say, with how much I like the top of the league this year, Dayton could still make the NIT, which is what I think their destiny is. I think they're an NIT team this season. They could do that even if they finish like sixth. I think that this league is deep enough that we could be talking about like a multi-bid NIT run. So, you know, you lose the best player in the country, you lose two other starters. If you finish fifth and get a decent seed in the NIT, I'd say that's still a pretty good recovery.
Yeah. Well, that's it for all the questions we're going to talk about. We had a couple others from St. Louis fans that I don't want to do, basically just asking why I hate them so much, which is not true. I don't hate St. Louis. It looks like I got the pick wrong. I'm sorry, guys. But we're not gonna do any more of those. We already got the St. Louis question out of the way. So I guess with that, it was a fun first week of basketball. You have anything else?
There's one more question for the pod, and it comes from me.
Oh.
It's a two-parter. Have you figured out which Mitchell twin is which? And what is your expected date for figuring it out?
I think Makai's 21 and Mikkel's 22, but that's just a guess. I don't know. Yeah, that's going to take a while.
I don't think I'm going to have this crack till like mid to late January. All I know is both of them foul a lot.
Yeah, that's true. Well, at least with two of them, you know, they're not always going to both be in foul trouble, hopefully.
Well, now they have Jermaine Harris, so they can survive again. So they can survive if both of them are in foul trouble. So
speaking of that, Fats got four fouls in the first half against Arizona State. I can't remember the last time I've seen that. Pretty crazy stuff in that game.
I was just trying to erase that from my memory. Let's do 20 seconds on just how senselessly stupid that was.
Yeah, I made no
sense. Like, come on, David Cox, you're hanging around in the game. Like, yeah. It's not like they were down by 15 and you need to cut into the lead before halftime to have any hope. I think they were down by like 7 at that point. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Fats was incredible when he came back in the second half and then ended up fouling out with 7 minutes left, and that was the game.
Yeah.
When he fouled out, it was over. They were going to lose right then and there.
Yep, I agree. I mean, he did a good job in the second half because he played the entire, you know, first 13 or 14 minutes without getting another foul. But
and by the way, he gave up like 7 layups.
Yeah,
not like he bad. just decided that he would rather just not play defense at all and commit his 5th foul. I kind of don't blame him because they were playing such great offense at that point. But he was just letting guys go past them, and then he got his 5th on a reach in, and
yeah, that was rough that. Luck. Yeah, but whatever. Fats is still playing pretty well. I've seen a lot of people come out of the woodwork and criticize him, mostly because of the John Rothstein All-American tweets, I think. People don't enjoy those, but Fats is still a great player. And I got a little bit of heat for not putting him on my preseason first team. I don't think you did either, did you? I think he could very well make it. I had Rhode Island in 9th place, and if that happens, I don't see someone from the 9th place team making it on the first team, but he's still a great player. Even though we kind of joke about him a lot, I have a lot of respect for what he does for Rhode Island. He's so much fun to watch in the A-ton.
I mean, this is a guy who both once went toe-to-toe with Trae Young in an NCAA tournament game as a freshman, and then came back the next year and was the worst shooter in college basketball history for 3 months.
And then
if anyone says that they can predict what Fats Russell is going to do over a season, they're either a fool or a homer. And so I just put him on second team because I just feel like that's the median of his likely outcomes.
I think that's
there's
totally
20
fair.
Different things that could happen to Fats Russell, and if you average them all out, it ends with him being a decent second team guy. So yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, not everyone agrees, but whatever. I mean, I think Rhode Island can go as far as he takes them this year, whatever that means for them.
So I'd say that just about does it for our first in-season episode of the Three Bid League pod. Guys, it happened. College basketball is here. We can't get scared and say that the season's not going to happen anymore. We're going to lose some teams. I think we actually lost St. Joe's today.
I didn't want to talk about that. We did.
But it's going to happen. But the season's here. The first 5 days were super fun. I forgot how fun it is to tape a VCU game because you get busy and you have to watch it at 1 a.m. That was a delight watching them beat Memphis like 3 hours after it actually happened. Really gave me a late night kick of energy watching Bones crash into guys, but we're here. I know the fans are into it because we got our fattest mailbag of questions that we've ever had. Thank you guys for all sending that in. Make sure to keep sending them throughout the season. Helps give us some good podcast content. If you enjoyed what you heard, give us 5 stars on iTunes, leave us a review. Anything that you think we're doing well or think we can do better, send us a message on Twitter, or you can shoot us an email, number3bidleaguepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Everybody stay safe.